Welcome back to Drive Time on WCLK. I'm Dr. Adrian C. Douglas. If you would like to take part in tonight's live conversation about lung cancer and lung disorders, please call 404-880-9255 right now. We have with us today Dr. Jermaine Jackson, and we'd like to hear from Laris in Dacula. Laris?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Dr. Douglas, I am the Laris that you know.
Indeed.
And I just wanted to call for two things. Number one, I wanted to thank you all for doing the show. Very informative and very educational. And my dad passed away in 2014 around Thanksgiving as a result of this type of cancer. And so a lot of what you all are saying is very educational for me, because looking back over his life, he was exposed to a lot of the risk factors that you all are mentioning. He was in the military. We do know he was exposed to asbestos and Agent Orange. After that, he worked construction, and he was exposed to asbestos again. And I think the major part of his risk factors was that he smoked from the time he was probably about 15 until well into his 40s. So he was exposed to all of those risk factors. My question for you is, right now we see a popularity in cigar smoking. And so I just want to know, is there a difference between cigar smoking, what we traditionally refer to as cigarette smoking, and if so, what are the risk factors and how great are they?
Cigar smoking, and thank you for calling, Laris. I appreciate you calling in. And I'm sorry about, you know, the information regarding the transition of your father also, too. Your question about cigar smoking is nicotine. Nicotine is tobacco. Any exposure to tobacco increases one's risk of lung cancer. Certainly with cigar smoking and cigarette smoking, the contact of the nicotine and all of the additional products involved in the mouth, the oropharynx, in other words, the throat, the esophagus, all these other parts of the body, in addition to the lungs, can also be impacted by exposure to cigar smoke. In addition, it also aggravates heart disease. Nicotine impacts your blood pressure. It makes your blood pressure go up. It makes your arteries squeeze down. It can lead to a heart attack or stroke. All of the risk factors associated with cigar smoking are similar to cigarette smoking. So I tell all individuals not to smoke cigars. Dr. Jackson, you'd like to add?
Yeah, great question, because this is one of those topics that always comes up. And one of the things that we often hear individuals say is the old Bill Clinton statement, but I don't inhale. And one of the things I like to tell my patients is very similar to what Dr. Douglas just mentioned, is that cigars still contain tobacco. One of the things to understand about tobacco is that tobacco has approximately 69 known carcinogens. Carcinogens are cancer-causing agents. These are things that we know cause cancer. And those are actually FDA approved by the federal government to be in the product. So regardless of a cigarette or a cigar or oral tobacco use, all of those particular elements increase your overall risk of developing lung cancer. One of the hot things that we see on the market now is the use of hookahs. And what's interesting about hookah smoking is that hookahs also, they utilize tobacco products, but people think that because the actual inhalation goes through a water filter, that somehow decreases your risk. What we learn is that that's not necessarily true. At the end of the day, they've actually looked at this where they did what is called radio labeling, meaning that they labeled the actual the tobacco products that could be deposited into the lungs, and was able to look at it through an x-ray. And they found that even with the utilization of hookahs, you still had deposition of those products into the lung.
Thank you again, Laris, for giving us a call. Lisa from Fayetteville, thanks for calling Drive Time with Dr. Douglas.
Hi. Good afternoon. I was leaving work when I changed to the channel and saw that you guys were speaking of sarcoidosis. My mother has suffered from the condition for, she was diagnosed a over 26 years ago, and she was, of course, given prednisone to manage the symptoms of sarcoidosis. And now her doctor, I guess, I don't know if it's an experimental thing, but he's actually given her some kind of cancer medicine, because I think at this point the doctor that she is with doesn't really know how to treat the disease, because according to our research, sarcoidosis is not curable. And does my mother have to live on prednisone or remain on prednisone, the steroid? She's tried the lower dosage and she'll have flare-ups. And so I just want some advice, and maybe you can refer me to a doctor for her, because I don't want her to keep having taking explorative medicines to cure something that, you know, I understand that it's not curable.
Well, treatment of sarcoidosis with steroids, that's considered the standard of care, and it really depends on the severity of your mother's condition. You talked about 25 years or more of disease, so it's certainly chronic. The attempt of the doctors and all of us are to try to minimize the use of steroids. Steroids do a lot of good, but steroids do a lot of bad, so it's a lot of collateral damage that comes with it. So the plan always is try to minimize the use of steroids, use the right amount for the right amount of time, and to stop. And so, again, the attempt is by the presumed pulmonologist to try to get her off of the steroids. Dr. Jackson will make some additional comments. Dr. Jackson?
Yeah. So whoever's treating your mom, current state, it appears that they're actually doing the right thing, believe it or not. You made a great point that, as we alluded to earlier, we don't necessarily know what causes sarcoidosis. As a result, we don't necessarily cure sarcoidosis. It is considered, current state, an incurable disease. There's only two drugs that are currently approved, FDA approved, for the treatment of sarcoidosis. One of those is prednisone or steroids, and the other one is something called Acthar, which is a type of medication that you can inject to actually help your body make its own steroids. All of the other medications are considered off-label use. And so when a physician is approaching someone and trying to treat their sarcoidosis, the goal is to get the inflammation down, because sarcoidosis leads to inflammation in the body. And it's that inflammation that ultimately leads to damage, and that can damage any organ. Remember, sarcoid can affect any organ. Just 90% of the time it tends to affect the lung, but it can affect the brain, the eyes, the skin, the bones, the joints, the liver, any organ. And so you want to try to prevent organ damage at the end of the day related to the inflammation. If, for example, your mother has been on the steroids for a long period of time, but yet she's still starting to experience flares, as you alluded to, then that physician is right in terms of saying, let's consider some other aggressive therapy that could potentially reduce that inflammation, because it's the inflammation that leads to those flares. In addition to that, they're trying to avoid some of the multiple adverse effects or side effects you can get related to steroids. So those are some of the reasons that one would consider using alternative medicines. Although they're not necessarily FDA approved, they have things like methotrexate, or some of the type drugs that not necessarily FDA approved, but certainly have been studied in sarcoidosis patients.
Okay, I was just concerned, because when she told me that her doctors give her, you know, the form of a cancer medicine, I was like, whoa, let's just back this up for a minute. But now that you're saying that, you know, the doctor is doing everything he can, you know, to, like you say, it's not curable, but, you know, doing everything he can to try and minimize some of her symptoms, then that makes more sense now.
I just wanted to jump in on that cancer medication. So, for example, the one I just mentioned, methotrexate, and there are many others that are out there, Imuran, leflunomide, these are azathioprine, Celcept. These are other medications that are there. But some of these medications, historically, when they first came onto the market, take methotrexate, for example, which has been out 40, almost 50 years. When it first came out, it was used for the treatment of cancer. It's now one of those that we no longer use it for cancer treatment. In some ways, it's sort of the 8-track of treating cancer, because it was one of the agents that came out many, many years ago. But we did find it had great and potent anti-inflammatory effects. And that's, again, the goal is to reduce the inflammation related to the disease.
Lisa, you may not have heard, but Dr. Jackson is expert in sarcoidosis. That's something he's done a lot of research and really is available for a second opinion if necessary. So Dr. Jermaine Jackson.
Where is Dr. Jackson located?
He's on staff at Piedmont Atlanta Hospital. Thanks for calling Drive Time with Dr. Douglas. Stacy in Jonesboro, thanks for calling Drive Time with Dr. Douglas. You're on air.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for allowing me to call in. My question is, I bought a house in Washington, D.C., and I did a home remodeling. I took up the floor in the kitchen, only to determine after I had it up that the glue or whatever the there was something on the floor that contained asbestos. And I wasn't aware of that until I'd already taken up the whole floor. So my children were exposed, and I was exposed. And that was in about the year 2000. So I've always wondered, was that exposure something that I should be concerned about going forward, or was it, or no?
Being exposed to asbestosis or asbestos is certainly something to be concerned about at whatever age in your life. So, indeed, you should have some type of formal evaluation by your healthcare provider. It may very likely would benefit from seeing a pulmonologist to kind of keep an eye on you, do special tests, looking at your lung function, CT imaging, things along that line would probably be beneficial for you and certainly your children also, too.
Okay. I will do that. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for calling Drive Time with Dr. Douglas. Lucia, Julia from Stone Mountain, thanks for calling. Drive Time with Dr. Douglas.
Good evening. In 2015, my mom passed away from lung cancer. Mm-hmm. She had had a number of x-rays that showed her lungs were, in pretty decent shape. They didn't show cancer. She was a smoker, had been a smoker for, since she was a teenager or younger. And by the time it was diagnosed, she was stage 4. What would have been the best way to identify the disease?
CT scan is the best imaging in terms of screening for lung cancer. So, again, it sounds like your mom was, for the most part, a smoker. And so depending on the number of packs of cigarettes she smoked, how long it was that she smoked, then using CT imaging is the best test to find out if there's any mass that may or may not be malignant involved in the lungs.
Okay, so x-rays not necessarily the best.
X-rays are okay, but x-rays, just think about having a microscope or a magnifying glass. CT scans are like a magnifying glass, so they see more detail, more granular detail than a chest x-ray. Chest x-rays are reasonable, but there's a certain size limit on what you can see on a chest x-ray, which you can see more of on a CT scan.
I often like to say, yeah. Dr. Douglas, and to the caller, mm-hmm. I often like to say that the chest x-ray is like looking at your old black and white television, and mm-hmm. the CT scan is like looking at high def. Mm-hmm. And so it gives you much better resolution. You're able to see things in much greater detail. And so current state, the technology we have, CT scans are the best. And that lung cancer screening that we've talked about before, what we actually did is we compared CT scans to chest x-rays, and we saw that doing CT scans reduced the risk of death by 20% compared to those who actually just got underlying or baseline chest x-rays. Now, I want to make sure that we all understand that if you go to your doctor, the first thing you should say is, no, I don't want a chest x-ray, I want a CT scan. There are times when the chest x-ray is certainly appropriate. I order far more chest x-rays than I do CT scans because that's what's necessary and indicated for what was happening at that time. But certainly if you have any of those risk factors, age 55 to 70, 30 pack years of smoking, or have quit within the last 15 years, then those are the individuals you should have a CT scan looking for lung cancer. And it should be mentioned that those are so-called low-dose CT scans, so you don't get a tremendous amount of radiation that you would get with a normal CT scan.
We're live with Drive Time on Dr. Douglas, 404-880-9255. We've got Will from Southwest Atlanta. Thanks for calling, Will.
Yes, sir. I'm 61-year-old man. Okay, I never smoked, but my babysitter used to, but back in the early 50s, and they didn't know about secondhand smoke. But I've been diagnosed with COPD, prostate level high. Okay, my question is, and I used to have asthma. They wonder why I cough and sneeze all the time. secondhand. Oh, well, back then they didn't know it. I got COPD, prior level high. My question is there a cure for COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease?
There's treatments for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, but there's no cure, sir. And again, it may be, in fact, that your lungs may have been, in fact, impacted by the smoke at such a young age when they were developing. It was difficult for me to understand you. Did you say that you never smoked yourself? Is that correct?
Never smoked.
Okay, but then secondhand smoke certainly was something that occurred at a young age. And then it could have been occupational exposure, whatever work you did throughout your life. There may have been, you know, some type of exposure to fumes, toxins, chemicals, things along that line that could have led to injury to the lung tissue, which led to COPD.
Yes, I always had asthma.
Certainly asthma that gets worse and is not well treated can lead to injury, irreversible injury to the lungs, which can lead to a chronic exacerbations and problems, which eventually lead to oxygen dependency and COPD. Are you on oxygen, sir?
Yes, I take every drug you can name.
All right.
I'm a part on and on. I go on and on.
Every medication, sir, that we can name.
But the thing is, people back then didn't know about secondhand smoke.
This is true. This is true. This is something that we've learned.
And it's coming up to people of my age now. I'm 61.
Yeah, there was a lot that we learned about smoking during the 60s when the Surgeon General made his announcement. So, unfortunately, there were things that we weren't aware about back when you were younger, sir.
Yes, but I know COPD. I get disability benefits. But the thing is, they didn't know it back then.
Mm-hmm.
Secondhand smoke. I never smoked. Okay.
All right. Thank you for calling, sir. Thanks for calling. We have Patricia in Mableton. Thanks for calling Drive Time with Dr. Douglas.
Hi, this is Patricia. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling, ma'am.
I will make this very quick. I was, in October 2 years ago, I went into my doctor's office and I had an evaluation and my oxygen level went to 50. I should include the fact that I was a former smoker.
Yes,
however,
ma'am.
I also worked in some buildings that I am aware of had asbestos within the building. Okay, well, I went into the doctor. My levels were at 55. I was admitted into the hospital and was there for 7 days. They evaluated me. They did CT scans. Of course, $10,000 later, it was determined that I may have sarcoidosis. So they did they took tissue or a biopsy?
Biopsy, ma'am. They put a tissue under the microscope. Go ahead.
Yep, they did that, and they determined it was negative. So do I need to worry about anything anymore? And they also determined that I have sleep apnea as well in the process. So now I'm using oxygen at night as a BiPAP with my CPAP machine. No longer smoke, but I'm just wondering, do I need to still be going to get CT scans?
Now, you didn't mention, you said you're a former smoker, but you didn't tell me what year you stopped.
Okay. Well, actually, the same day that I went into the hospital, so that's been only 2 years ago, and I smoked for about 10 years.
Yes, ma'am.
Not daily, but I know it doesn't matter how much.
So. Yeah. So you're considered high risk, just determine the number of pack years that you smoke, but you should still be having some level of screening. You talked about the exposure of asbestos. You talked about years of smoke, and you talked about sleep apnea, which, by the way, if not treated, you need to make sure you use your CPAP. Otherwise, you can lead to irreversible damage to your lungs in the form of pulmonary hypertension. We talk about hypertension in our blood vessels. That's in your blood vessels. You don't want to get hypertension in your lungs. That can lead to a lot of problems, which at this point in time, we'll probably talk about on another day.
Okay.
But please continue with your screening, ma'am, okay?
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Yes, ma'am. Frank from Buckhead.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Good.
I've been living with sarcoidosis for 15 years, okay?
Yes, sir.
And, sometimes I wish I did have COPD because it would probably be easier to manage. But it took a while for them to determine exactly what was going on because they didn't know. And in many cases, it masks itself as a form of cancer. And currently, I'm doing the steroids. and some breathing maintenance medications, as well as other things. It's tricky. It's tricky, and you have good days and you have bad days.
Yes,
you
sir.
Really, for every one good day, you got four bad days. Okay.
All right. Yes, sir. Well, thank you for calling Drive Time with Dr. Douglas.
All right.
We have a time to go to break at this point in time. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to Drive Time on WCLK. I'm Dr. Adrian C. Douglas. Call us, stay on the line. If you have a question about tonight's discussion on lung disorders, call 404-880-9255.
Programming on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is made possible in part by MDVIP. Dr. Adrian Douglas, host of Drive Time with Dr. Douglas, is an affiliated physician with MDVIP. He has practiced internal medicine at Piedmont Hospital for more than 20 years. Dr. Douglas's primary care practice is focused on prevention. His patients take part in a wellness program made up of comprehensive, advanced health screenings and diagnostic tests that have been shown to detect issues earlier. He then customizes a wellness plan based on each patient's individual results. More information is available at mdvip.com.
Welcome back to Drive Time on WCLK. I'm Dr. Adrian Douglas, and I have with me today Dr. Jermaine Jackson, board-certified pulmonologist on staff at Piedmont Atlanta Hospital. We've been talking about lung cancer and lung-related disorders. Dr. Jackson, how can our listening audience get in contact with you?
Well, certainly. Thank you, Dr. Douglas. It's been an awesome time to be here this evening. For those of you who are looking for a pulmonologist, a lung doctor, I'm actually located, I have two locations. I'm at Piedmont Atlanta. That telephone number is 404-350-0009. I also have an office in Austell, and you can call the same number, again, 404-350-0009. And certainly let them know you want to take a look, and we're happy to get you in and deal with any of the lung-related lung diseases you may have.
Thank you so much. I think we have someone online. Chris, Indicator, thanks for calling Drive Time with Dr. Douglas.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I just want to let you guys know that I'm very happy to be listening on the radio. I just so happened to change to the station. And, of course, I've been a smoker for probably about 3 years. And when I listen to the program, I feel like, well, this is probably a wake-up call for me to just go ahead and stop. I just have a question. I know that we mentioned tobacco products, asbestos, and I was just kind of wondering in the back of my mind, is there anything else that we should be concerned about in conjunction with smoking, such as bacteria or maybe some form of pollen that, you know, that can basically get in our lungs and we can inhale that could possibly cause us to get sick? What do you think?
Bacteria, I'm not aware of it. In terms of environmental agents, in particular individuals who are exposed to dust, particularly industrial dust, individuals who are exposed to granite, things along that line, particles, individuals are exposed to fuel exhaust, like working out in the airport, all those type of things can lead to overall exposure to conditions which may increase your risk of having lung cancer. But in terms of an exact bacteria, that eludes me. Dr. Jackson, are you aware of anything along that line?
At present, there's no identifiable information or data that says there's an exact bacteria that is clearly associated with the development of lung cancer. With that said, you raise a great point, because what we're coming to understand is that we're finding bacterias that are related with other type disease states. So, for example, so-called H. pylori or Helicobacter pylori has been associated with the development of ulcers in the stomach. We know that there are certain viruses like HSV, which is herpes simplex virus, and HPV, human papillomavirus, which is associated with cervical cancer. So I always tell people that at this point, we're just not necessarily sophisticated enough. But as time goes on and more research is done, we may look up 10, 15, 20 years from now and find something else that is associated with the development of certain disease states. So it's not something that we know of today, but in many years to come, who knows?
Okay.
Thank you for calling, Chris. And hopefully you'll be able to stop smoking. We're having the Great American Smokeout coming up in November on the 21st of this month. We have someone else online.
Yes, hi.
Kayla?
Yes, hi. How are you?
How are you doing? Thanks for calling Drive Time.
Thank you for taking my call. I had a question about marijuana use and just how it relates to the lungs. I'm a relatively young woman. I'm 32, and I used to previously smoke marijuana, and I stopped smoking marijuana about 2 or 3 years ago. But I just, you know, have my concerns about what that might have done to my lungs. I know that they're legalizing it everywhere, and it's, you know, kind of, you know, seen as not, you know, a big deal, but just, you know, listening to your show and just the different perspectives of, you know, what, you know, the smoke can do to your lungs. I'm just curious if, you know, if there's any, you know, research that backs, you know, just harmful effects of marijuana use.
The process of smoking marijuana and actually holding it in the lungs over a long period of time means there's more contact of the marijuana with the lining of the lung, more diffusion of the different ingredients into the lung. Understandably, marijuana and a lot of recreational drugs, we don't know exactly what's in them. We don't know what's been sprayed on them. So those things can lead to problems involving the lungs. And a lot of things are to be found as we increasingly move towards legalizing more and more marijuana use in the country. Now, of note, recently we've had this epidemic of vaping that has come in, you know, to popularity throughout our country. So some of the deaths that have been related to vaping have been secondary to the use of THC-containing products inside the vape devices. And so, in general, marijuana use involving the lungs, certainly in the vaping, is certainly suspect. It's led to damage and potentially some deaths. But over the long period of time, the use of marijuana and holding it for long periods of time can, to a certain degree, impact lung functioning. Dr. Jackson, you can add and embellish on that.
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a gentleman by the name of Donald P. Taskin, who's probably one of the thought leaders and forerunners in terms of research in marijuana. And Donald actually started out his career in the actual 60s. So if you do the math, you can see he's been around for a while in terms of the medical arena. But I bring him up because he started out to try to show that marijuana caused significant harm to the lung. He's a pulmonologist out in UCLA. But ultimately what Dr. Taskin found was that, in fact, marijuana is associated with two major impacts on the lung. Number one, it increases your risk for chronic bronchitis for the reasons that Dr. Douglas alluded to earlier, the inhalation of toxins and things like that. The other is something called a pneumothorax, which is where the lung sort of pops or collapses. And if you think about it, unlike a cigarette where you have a filter, with marijuana, if you're smoking a marijuana, oftentimes you're going to take just a long drag on that, and that will cause the lungs to hyperinflate and can increase your risk of having that pneumothorax. Unlike tobacco products, however, there is no clear association with marijuana and COPD. There's no clear association with the use of marijuana and lung cancer. And getting to the point that you brought up, which is a great topic in terms of the vaping that we're seeing current state, this is an epidemic that we're facing across the country. And vaping, the CDC recently released a report approximately 2 weeks ago that basically says they strongly recommend that you do not vape. We are seeing tremendous lung injury and the number of deaths that have increased, mostly related to vaping and the inclusion of THC, which is one of the compounds associated with cannabis being part of the marijuana family. So the strong recommendation is do not vape. And one of the things I tell people is that, yes, although the number of so-called carcinogens, again, those cancer-causing agents that is often found in cigarettes, is lower in vaping products, at the end of the day, vaping products still have cancer-causing agents in them. So not only are people dying just related to vaping, but you can also increase your risk of developing cancer potentially.
Thanks for calling. Dr. Jackson, I had one of my patients to come in and was really telling me that they felt that they could transition from smoking cigarettes to vaping to eventually not smoking at all. And I strongly dissuaded them against that. I felt that some of the other ways that we have in terms of smoking cessation were safer. But nonetheless, there is, I guess, some belief by individuals that they may be able to transition from traditional smoking cigarettes to vaping. But again, certainly I think that's something questionable and not anything that I would recommend.
Yeah, that was a little bit of merit to that, that people who were using so-called e-cigarettes or vaping historically were able to have higher rates of smoking cessation. And when you looked at those studies, you got different outcomes. So again, as you stated, there's some controversy surrounding that. But current state, because of the lung injury and the impact that we've been seeing associated with vaping products, especially those who have added THC, strongly recommend to avoid vaping altogether.
Great. Well, Dr. Jackson, it's been a pleasure having you on Drive Time with Dr. Douglas. Certainly, we've talked a lot about a lot of different things today. We've talked about lung cancer. We've talked about chronic lung diseases. Spent a lot of time talking about sarcoidosis, which, by the way, impacts individuals of African descent at a higher rate than people from other ethnicities. Is that correct?
In the United States, that is a correct statement. In fact, African-American women are almost two times more likely to develop sarcoidosis in this country than other ethnicities.
And we talked about the fact that smoking is the major cause of most lung-related illnesses and cancer.
If you don't take anything else away from my time here today, which I'm very grateful for and appreciative for inviting me on, please, please, please stop smoking.
Yeah. So listening, audience, the Great American Smokeout is going to be on November the 21st. So this is an opportunity for you to help yourself or help someone else to stop smoking. So November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Lung cancer is the number one cause of cancer death worldwide in both men and women. Secondhand smoke can lead to increased risk of lung cancer at an alarming rate. Smoking is the most preventable cause of cancer, so we would certainly urge you to stop smoking. Make an appointment with your health care provider. They have the resources and the time to help you with smoking cessation, and they certainly have the skill set to help you with screening for lung cancer. Dr. Jackson.
100% agree. Remember that the only cancer that we have that could be potentially preventable is lung cancer, and that's by not smoking. Thanks a lot, Dr. Douglas.
Thank you, Dr. Jackson. And thank you, listening audience, for listening to Drive Time with Dr. Douglas. All right.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Drive Time with Dr. Douglas on WCLK. More information about Dr. Douglas and MDVIP is available at mdvip.com or by phone at 1-866-347-9339. You can listen to this program a second time on demand at WCLK.com. Drive Time with Dr. Douglas is produced by WCLK in conjunction with MDVIP. Executive producer for MDVIP is Sean Kelly. The producer for WCLK is Rob Maynard. On behalf of Dr. Adrian Douglas, MDVIP, and WCLK, we wish you the best of health.